Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 82 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcast streaming services, so go back and fill your boots. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, rate and review this podcast to help us become more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us yet. We'd really appreciate it. And now for this week's podcast. Last week, we brought you the cast from Long Day's Journey Into Night, which just closed at the Wyndham's Theater, having transferred from the Bristol Old Vic. And this week is another transfer in the shape of a new musical. We had the pleasure of making a show visit to The Grinning Man, currently playing at the Trafalgar Studios. Based on the novel The Man Who Laughs by Victor Hugo, I won't do the French title because I will do it a disservice. The Grinning Man was created by Warhorse director Tom Morris at the Bristol Old Vic. He brought together Tim Phillips and Mark Teitler, a book by Carl Gross, and all four of them collaborated on the lyrics. The company of actor, musician, puppeteers was outstanding, and I was fully expecting this production to be in the mix for Best New Musical at this year's Olivier Awards, and its omission, in my humble opinion, was a travesty. It really is one of the most original musicals I have seen in London. I talked to Sean Kingsley, Sanna Denbestin, and Louis Maskell about how hard it is to place and describe The Grinning Man, the transfer from the Bristol Old Vic, working with puppets, and keeping the voice in fine working order in one of the toughest sings on stage at the moment. Have a listen.
Different from Jesus Christ Superstar, this.
Just a bit.
It's much less of a kind of pop, you know, conventional music, conventional or rock opera or anything like that. It's definitely in the style of like Shockhead and Peter, even though they had, you know, songs in it. But this is more kind of a Sondheim, you know, Sweeney Todd feel.
What I love is listening to people try to describe it.
Yeah.
And you're the classic example, because you can see people rubbing their heads. And when people come and see it, ever since we first did it in Bristol, they've come and said, "Oh my God, that was amazing." You know, I've always said to people, I challenge you to go and try and describe it to someone else and get them, because it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's genre changing stuff, this, which is why I fell in love with it in the first place. There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
And I you can imagine the amount of interviews I have to do.
Mm.
I've sat there on the BBC trying to explain it, you know, and it's almost impossible because it breaks all the rules. It's almost, well, I'd say it's like a two fingers up to musical theatre, but it's not that harsh. But it does set out to break all the rules and push the boundaries, and that is what new theatre should do. I never wanted to be in a Hamilton or anything that kind of got rave reviews across the board.
Yeah.
Because that's for me, is not progressive theatre.
Yeah.
Progressive theatre is someone like Sondheim.
Yeah.
Who upset everybody.
Yeah, of course.
When West Side Story came out, half the people hated it.
Yeah.
Because it was so different. Rocky Horror Show on the other end of the scale. You know, you can imagine what people were like when they first saw the Rocky Horror Show, what the hell is this crap,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And yet, look at it now. And that's what progressive theatre should do. It should break the rules, break the boundaries, and it should have half of the audience going, I don't get this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what our show does to a degree.
Absolutely. Yeah. I found that it takes storytelling in theatre. And I had to tweet about it last night. I came out and said, you know, this was brilliant. It was theatre in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
Like, that's how storytelling is. It's, it's the makeup, it's the using puppetry, it's the singing, it's the staging, it's the dancing, it's comedy, it's breaking the fourth wall. There's a lot of kind of music hall feel to some of it.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. I mean, I don't know if they set out intentionally to do it, but what I studied, my main area of focus of my degree was Commedia dell'arte.
Right,
this is
very much
within the Commedia dell'arte rules,
yeah.
in so much that you've got the family characters, myself, Grim Pain, and Dea, mm-hmm. who very much take on the tragedy, and we're not allowed to break that fourth wall. Or what all we have to do is allow that mayhem and comedy to go on around us, very much like Commedia dell'arte.
Yeah,
you know?
That's good stuff. So you were here. You come from Bristol. You were in the original production.
Yeah.
Is there any difference coming into the Trath? I mean, I've just had a little tour backstage. It's really tight. Was it the same in Bristol?
It's bizarrely it's smaller than Bristol, and Bristol on the touring circuit is one of the smallest theatres.
But you managed to squeeze it in.
John Bowser, our designer, has managed to squeeze it in. He's done a phenomenal job with
genius.
The perspective. He is.
Genius.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
And you don't get it until you actually go and stand on the stage. Mm. You realise how small it is.
Yeah.
But it looks bigger off stage because of what he's done with the perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kind of immersive nature of the set that kind of wraps around you, you know, which is incredibly important for this show. You
know,
you need to feel like you're in this dark fairground.
Yeah,
you know.
When you do that, you achieve it with the VOM use and also with the side entrances as well, so the people are surrounded.
Yeah,
the audience members are surrounded by what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it's it breaks the fourth wall to some people because a lot of people are very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
we don't do that. What we
there is no participation.
No,
but you're
what
you're
it is immersive.
It's immersive, and you're asking people to lean in.
Exactly.
There's a big difference between breaking the wall, like you're going to look me in the eye, and breaking the fourth wall, we're going to drag your ass up on stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, which doesn't happen. Excellent, Sean. Thank you so much, man.
I just want to talk about your experience on the show. Now, this is something like I have never seen before.
I know.
This is great.
Yeah. It's amazing to be a part of
it. It's such a good show. And you guys have been going for a while?
Yeah, since the beginning of December.
Yeah.
Some people have done it before in Bristol, but I've been new to the cast transfer into London.
Okay, cool. Did you know about that? I mean, because it is new. Did you
because I was in a show at the time, so I didn't catch it in Bristol. But I remember getting the material through for the auditions, and I played one of the songs, recordings from Bristol, and I was like, I want to do this. And I haven't felt like that with an audition coming in for a long time.
Yeah.
So it was straight away like, oh, this is really different.
Yeah.
Like, this is cool.
Yeah, no, it was great. And this is a busy show. It's not just like coming on in a costume and seeing something. There are complete transformations in between it. So it's busy and it's tight backstage. There's no room backstage.
Yes.
So there's lots of different entrances that you guys employ. And so how is it getting used to this space? Like, kind of with as much happening in the show. I mean,
it's been things like, you know, the wharf is quite big, and quite frankly, sometimes there just was like, we have no room to sort of go. So you know, it was challenging. I think the way, you know, John Bowles is set, and the way Tom has used the space, and the fact that it's quite intimate, it's sort of only added, I think, to the atmosphere and to the show.
It's all right, that can stay on.
Yeah.
And have you had any kind of puppetry experience before?
No. I did work with Toby Ollier, who's part of the puppetry company, and it was like walking over with one puppet, but like, no, I didn't. And it was challenging at the start, to say the least, but I was like, I'm not sure how I'm going to do this.
Is that because, like,
it's
fascinating?
Whole different thing.
Yeah, because you can't, it's like doing something you can't draw attention to yourself when you're playing the puppet?
Yes.
Well,
and also, like, I think this brilliant, really simple idea that the puppets of my younger self and Brimpain's younger self play with puppets.
Yeah.
So then it's literally, for me as a puppeteer, I need to look at my puppet.
Yeah.
But I'm also blind. Come in. So I can't properly look at the puppet.
Yeah.
And then the puppet that I'm playing with needs to... Hello, come in. the puppet that I'm playing with is looking
hi
at the other puppet. So you know, it's really easy for me as an actor to look at the little puppet she's playing with. So yeah. That was in the beginning a sort of mindfuck, yeah. But really cool once you manage it. It's yeah. Sort of really rewarding.
Excellent. And the approach to the music, it is very much... It's not like a lot of contemporary musicals, actually, that kind of have that pop edge to it. It's much more of the... I think I'd like it. It really is like Sweeney Todd. Kind of felt like a lot of it that,
yeah.
That Sondheim, which is much more about storytelling. And it's yeah. Where the story is key.
Yeah.
And it's not...
Yeah.
I mean, there are great melodies, but what you come away with,
it really sort of, yeah, yeah, works together instead of a now I'm going to sing a song, yeah. Which it sometimes is the case
with yeah.
Other shows.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything.
I'm not saying anything, but I think, no, I said, like, I think that is good. Maybe don't use this bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you mind if I
take myself? No, not at all.
More than Marriott.
Yeah. So one more thing.
Yes.
You know, what is it like coming into... You just talked about it. You know, there were people who come in who established these characters in this show. From
yes.
Bristol. So what was it like coming into that company? And because this is so stylish, because there's a way to tell this story.
Come in. I'm not sure if you still fit. Hello. Yeah, it was a bit more like, I remember the first read through, and then Tom was like, we were going to read through, and Tom, our director, was like, do you also want to sing? And I heard, like, Louis and everybody who'd done it before in Bristol, and I literally was like, I don't think I want to sing my song anymore. And I never really had that, but I was literally so blown away by hearing all of the music and, yeah. and just already the work that, you know, Julian and Louis and Sean had been doing was just so cool. So, yeah, it was really exciting.
For me, the music is very much in this vein. For me, it's very much in the vein of like Sondheim. Like I said, it's kind of like I feel it's a Sweeney Todd-ish
yeah.
kind of feel.
Yeah.
And there are lovely melodies that go through, but there isn't like a pop song that you come out singing. It's like Whistle Down the Wind or something. It's not conventional
yeah.
music. But what you get is a story. Like this story comes out, and at every point, like it's so economical in the storytelling, and it's. And it's music and musicianship. That's so refreshing.
Yeah,
so refreshing.
And I think, like you know, unfortunately nowadays, you know, especially the West End.
Yeah,
I think audiences are conditioned to. To not, I guess, not be tested enough. You know, I think a lot of shows, at the moment anyway, are kind of, they're good.
Yeah,
and. But they could be better,
yeah.
And I think the music could be tougher
yeah.
and more complex, and
yeah.
sort of actually treat the audience as if they're, you know, give them a challenge as opposed to feeding them
yeah.
stuff. But you know, the thing is that sells,
yeah.
And you know, for every sort of grinning man, there's 10
yeah.
other things,
yeah.
which are less sort of, I guess, less. Interesting.
Yeah. It's a shame that Victor Hugo didn't have a pop career, so they could do a jukebox musical.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
You did this in Bristol,
yeah.
did you? And
along with Julian, who plays Barker Fedro,
yeah.
Sean, who plays Ursus, and
yeah.
Ewan, who plays
yeah.
the Hanged Man.
That's right. So it's a new group of people. Did it change much coming from Bristol? Is it?
Yeah, it did actually. I mean, the kind of the nucleus of it didn't change.
Yeah.
The you know the story didn't change, but in terms of how we got to the end, it changed a lot. Like
yeah.
we had quite a lot of very good material in Bristol, but it was packed for
right.
it, and it was quite a long show. So we had to strip it down and just really focus on you know the story as opposed to. Everything else,
yeah.
Because in Bristol, I guess I think the Grinning Man story wasn't as clear as it could have been, because at the end of the day, it's his
yeah.
story
yeah.
and how he sort of affects other people.
Yeah.
So coming to London, that was one thing I think they were desperate to kind of hone in on, and generally, I think yeah, just sort of. Having that chance to kind of have not a tryout, but you know, get it on its feet
yeah,
and sort
sure.
of see what works and see what doesn't work, was a real blessing. Because then you know, coming to London,
yeah.
we could just choose
yeah.
what worked.
Did the London references go down well? Trafalgar Fair.
We based in
Bristol. Bristolized it.
Yeah. We did like Stokes Croft Fair and Bristol and all that kind of thing. Honestly, it's weird. And they were at one point going to set it in Bristol, but then obviously we've got
you're perfectly placed between the Buckingham Palace and
Trafalgar Square. Exactly.
In regards to the singing and the musicality, it is packed, but is it kind of I want to say, because it's really ensemble singing. It's you know, that's something that I felt was new to me as well. So you had a whole new crew come in.
Yeah.
Like, how quickly did that gel, though? I mean, they seem quite... talk to the girls, and a lot of them are, you know, sight readers or actor musicians or whatever. Did it come together quite quickly?
It did, actually, because the creative team treated the process like it was a new production. Yeah. So I think for the new members of the company, it felt to them as if it was their production. Yeah. So they had time to learn all the stuff. And to be honest, because we were cutting stuff and putting new stuff in it, we were all collectively sort of learning stuff afresh anyway. It didn't feel to me as if we were holding on to anything from Bristol. Everything was up for grabs, and I think in that sense it didn't feel like, oh, by the way, you know, so and so did that, so could you do that. It was a really organic process, actually.
Yeah.
And one I was really, I guess, surprised with, because I've never been a part of a transfer before.
Mm.
And I expected, that kind of, what did she do there?
Yeah.
Oh, can you go there? It wasn't that at all. And I'm not, now looking back in hindsight, I don't know why I thought that, because Tom Morris, our director, is so not like that at all.
Yeah. So, I suppose if you haven't done a transfer, that's kind of what it feels like. It gets hard when you... I mean, when I was in a new Shakespeare company, we had five or six people rotating all the roles, and we all knew multiple roles. So, you know, we all did our own way, but also you kind of went, oh, he does it like that. And you think, can't, because he did it like that. He's got that in him. A couple more questions, if that's cool.
Yeah.
One being about, well, the last kind of just really being about technically, was it any different, and how do you... You are obviously mic'd here, and technically I don't know the space in Bristol, but if it was any different, but it's quite a tough saying this, man.
Yeah.
But congratulations. I fucking love your voice, man. It is insane. I love it. It's brilliant. As soon as you start, I was like, oh, brilliant, here we go. Strap in, put the seatbelt on, here we go. You know, how do you, you know, was it different? Did you have to change your performance? Because with a transfer, each house plays differently.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think so. I think in Bristol, the way it's built, and because, you know, it's an old and very old building with a lot of wood. Mm. I think the acoustics are a lot better naturally there than opposed to here. But in terms of actually a huge difference, I didn't notice it. But also, it was a year after we finished in Bristol, so I couldn't really hold on to it a lot.
Yeah. I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah.
God, returning to a character, though, that's just brilliant. What a gift of a role, man, to be able to come back to that.
And actually, it was probably quite a good thing for me to have that amount of time to fester on it, I guess, because... Mm. Because the way I'm doing it is so different to how we did it in Bristol, and I had a lot of time to think about, if we do transfer, I wonder, I could do this and I could do that. So in that sense, actually, it was quite good for me to kind of go, right, that was Bristol, let's now do this.
Yeah, I'm done. Last one, just because your voice is so, you know, important. I mean, how do you keep it going? Because it is, like I said, it's kind of dry under air, and because the singing is. But what do you do to keep your...
So basically, when I graduated from drama school, I was finding that I was not getting many jobs. So I thought, right, I need to change my kind of approach. Sounds kind of a bit cheesy, but I basically thought of myself as an athlete.
Yeah. That's not cheesy at all, man. I wish more people... Yeah. Listen, people have to...
I know.
If you're in this craft, it's man, it's so important.
And I take it very seriously, yeah. And I would do... I did about... In terms of just technique, and singing technique, probably 3 to 4 hours of that a day.
Amazing.
And I would begin by just warming up my spoken voice, working on my diaphragm, and then gradually build up to... doing notes and sort of and stuff like that, and that gave me a real cast iron kind of base, to which I could then manipulate. But on the flip side, because I did so much work, I became quite rigid.
Right.
So then I had to almost get rid of it, knowing it was still there.
Yeah.
But then just sort of let it be and just go. I trust myself. It's going to happen. And that took quite a few years of battling, doing shows, going, it's fine, I don't have to warm, it's fine, I don't have to warm up.
Yeah.
Now, especially with this show, because it's incredibly freeing, this show, like the puppetry allows me to get into it, and I'm just, you know, there's nothing there. And I think, along with just keeping your voice healthy, like, you know, being sensible, like not drinking, and not doing this, and not doing that, and steaming, and also, what's weird is the juxtaposition is you've got to be sensible, but you've also got to relax.
Yeah.
So you've got to, it's finding a way of going, I'm not going to have a drink, but I might stay up until 3.
Yeah.
Playing a game or something. Of course. That kind of stuff.
Standard final.
Exactly. I tend to actually focus less on warming up now.
Yeah.
I do warm up.
Yeah.
With the company, but I used to do very, you know, I used to be obsessed with kind of going to my room and like doing stuff, and that would make you really tight.
Now
I just sort of do it and see what happens.
Man, I just think it's absolutely brilliant. Like, and that's people should just listen to that and do it. Brilliant. I've taken up far too much of your time.
Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theater professional, you need to head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. Publish your profile and start connecting to the theater industry. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Get in touch with me via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Sean Kingsley, Sanadin Beston, Louis Maskell, company manager Sheena Linden for helping us out, the producers, and the entire company of The Grinning Man, which you can see at the Trafalgar Studios until the 5th of May. Do yourself a favor. You have just over a week and a half to catch one of the most brilliant, original, funny, visually stunning musicals ever to have graced the West End. And I know I speak in superlatives all the time, but I really do mean it here. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheatre.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.